I was watching the news and there were the nurses and the doctors, you know, on the front lines of this pandemic, sacrificing so much of themselves for the good of the country. And that's when it all kind of clicked together in my head.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
Hello, everyone. I am Kristen Hanna, author of The Women and The Nightingale and The Four Winds. And I am so excited to be here today with Sylvia and me to talk about the women and what's coming up and all things writing and life in general.
Kristen, thank you so much for being here today. And I have to say, we are going to talk about all things writing because we are going to talk about your latest book that I could not put down. So you rattled off just a few of the 20 plus books that you've written in over, I believe, the last 30 years. That's an awful lot of books, lady. And you are an award-winning New York Times bestselling author. You have won awards, the Four Winds, The Great Alone, The Nightingale, and The Firefly Lane. We're all named Goodreads Best Historical Fiction, and The Nightingale was the coveted People's Choice Award for Best Fiction. Also, Firefly Lane, about two best friends, was the number one Netflix series when it came out, and there's buzz that there's liable to be series two. I don't know. That would be wonderful. And Nightingale is in production with TriStar.
Yeah, boy, it's amazing, isn't it?
Amazing. And the fact that Nightingale, I just want to read something that I saw that you had said or you had written about Nightingale. All too often, women's war stories are forgotten or overshadowed. I wanted to write a novel that remembered their sacrifice and courage while vividly showing what it was like to live in occupied France during the war. When reading it, I hope the reader asks, what would I do? Well, you seem to have that theme throughout, women's voices and women who we don't even think of in certain circumstances and throughout history. The Women takes place during the Vietnam War, which for me, I was a teenager, late teens, early 20s. I know people who came back from Vietnam. And I know for you, you have said that it was also personal. But you, in the book, at the end, your author's notes says that this book was a long time coming, that you actually started it sometime back in 1997. And it's very specific. I talked about how you said the Nightingale talked about women. I remember when the men came home from Vietnam, nobody ever really talked about the women. It's not a question of nobody ever really talked about the women. Nobody talked about the women. So tell me why this was so important to you, and we'll go from there.
Well, thanks, Sylvia. Yeah, I mean, I think when you referenced the Nightingale, and you said, you know, we never really think about what the women were doing. And the fact is, that is because we weren't taught about what the women were doing. Our stories were largely forgotten. A lot of marginalized stories were, you know, forgotten. I mean, I remember when I wrote about the Great Depression, I hadn't been taught about that. I lived during the Vietnam War, and we weren't taught about that. And so it became, for me, about 15 years ago, it became this quest to sort of return women to the historical landscape where they belong and to talk about the courage, the resilience, the grit that women have shown throughout history in a lot of different settings. This one, The Women, is, as you point out, more personal to me than most, because I, you know, was a kid during the Vietnam War. And one of my best girlfriend's father was a pilot, and he was shot down and missing in action, you know, when we were a couple of, I think, 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, something like that. And so I started, you know, wearing his prisoner of war bracelet, which was a thing where, you know, you'd wear this bracelet with his name and the date that he was lost. And the idea was that you would wear this until the servicemen came back. And so I wore this bracelet for years and years, and his, you know, his name was always in front of me. So I was always thinking about him, even as the war ended. And then, of course, as you point out, we saw how the vets were treated when they came home. And, you know, that made a big impact on me. So I had been wanting to write about the Vietnam vets who were forgotten and who were treated badly for years and years. And I first pitched this book in 1997. And my editor very rightly said, you just aren't old enough, you know, to tackle a subject of this importance and this gravitas. And so I put it aside. And as you may recall, this was a time when Vietnam was really almost a taboo subject. Excuse me. There were, you know, not movies, not books, you know, it was very much sort of the message was, we don't want to think about that war anymore. We don't want to think about that time anymore. And so I just kind of waited. And as you know, I wrote other books and became a mother and, you know, did other things. But I was always wanting to write this book. I just didn't know what it was. And then, you know, then I wrote The Nightingale and I started getting interested in these lost stories. And so I started thinking about Vietnam from that angle. And then in March of 2020, after I had turned in The Four Winds, we were suddenly in the COVID lockdown in Seattle. And I live on a small island. And so I was double locked down. There was nowhere to go. There was nothing to do. And I was watching the incredible anger and political division that was sweeping the country. You know, you couldn't avoid it. It was constantly in your face. And it reminded me of the Vietnam era. And I think that's why I kind of started, you know, thinking again. I was like, I need a new book. I need a new idea. What am I going to write about? And then I was watching the news and there were the nurses and the doctors, you know, on the front lines of this pandemic. Sacrificing so much of themselves for the good of the country. And that's when it all kind of clicked together in my head. And I thought, this is the moment I'm going to write about the nurses of Vietnam. And I was, you know, surprised as anyone, you know, when I got into it and saw how many of them there were and how much they sacrificed. And I am continually surprised at how consistently their story has been forgotten or overlooked.
And that's the thing, because there were over 10,000 American military females that were involved in the fighting. And when I say fighting, you know, they were on the front line. They were nurses, you know, people who remember MASH. I mean, yes, that took place in the Korean War, but you have to picture that. If someone could put it into any context, it's women on the front line saving the lives or helping to save the lives of the men who are out there fighting, and they're under fire as much as the men. No, they don't have the armor on them. They don't have the guns. They don't have, you know, the battle, but they're out on the battlefield. And the woman that you have as the protagonist, Frankie, she has no idea what she's gotten into. And that's the thing, because it was always, you know, the Vietnam War was the draft. And so you had people, you know, with their draft cards, burning cards, you know, people didn't want the war. People were upset with the war. And you have this young woman who's 20, who really, in her head, she's going to go out and do her part. It's a little bit more involved, but basically she's naive in thinking that, you know, she had studied nursing and she could go. So tell me, you know, she's there and she has two other characters, best friends, and you talk about the women and you talk about how they feel and the initial impact. How did you even come up with that? Because it is so striking and so, you know, you when you're reading it, you get into who Frankie is, where she is, and you're thinking, oh my God, what did she do? You know, she begged the Air Force and the Navy to take her in, but you needed 2 years of nursing. She didn't have that. So tell me, how did you decide to start there?
Well, everything in the book comes from the research and from the experiences of the women, you know, who were actually over here. And one of the things that struck me in reading the memoirs, and there's a list of these memoirs in the back of the book, some of them, the ones that I particularly loved, for anyone who wants to do more reading. But it was very clear to me that Frankie really represented a large number of the women who volunteered to be nurses in the Vietnam War. They were young. They were basically right out of nursing school. Most of them had certainly not enough training. Some of them very little training. As you point out, the Army didn't require them to have any practical experience really at all. And so she comes from this kind of affluent bubble world of Coronado Island, which is San Diego in the mid-60s. And she comes from a family that is very proud of their previous military service, very, you know, World War II, World War I, our family has always fought. And so Frankie enlists because she thinks it's her patriotic duty, because she thinks it's the right thing to do. She does it to make her parents proud. And so she ships out 3 months later and, you know, lands in a war zone and realizes very quickly that she does not have the skill set to be here. And the wounds that she's seen are horrific and unending. And these are the young men, you know, 18 to 23 that are her age, her generation. And they're just being wounded beyond anything she had ever imagined. And it is really the other nurses, her friends, Barb and Ethel, who have been in country for longer, who sort of say to her, hang on, take a breath. This is how we all feel. And now you're going to learn how to be a combat nurse. And these scenes are, as you point out, they're very visceral. They're very hard. And part of that was because when Frankie comes back and she's suffering from undiagnosed PTSD and she seeks help, for the psychological issues that she's facing. And what she is told over and over again is either A, there were no women in Vietnam, or you weren't in combat. And so it was really important for me to make the point that, you know, if this isn't combat, I don't know what is, and that anybody could suffer deep and lasting psychological trauma from having been exposed to what it was like in, you know, a combat hospital in 1968.
Well, as you mentioned, she had no real training. She had just gotten her degree. She also went off her, I don't want to give too much away, but in her family, her father had a room a hero's room where there were pictures of men and only men. Her father came from a naval background. All the men had been in the Navy. Her father hadn't been able to join for whatever reason, but there were no women. And when she said she had enlisted, her family said to her, there are no women in Vietnam. Women are not war heroes. So she actually went off to war, not only being naive as far as the fact that she was really told she wouldn't be in combat, that she wouldn't be in a war zone, but wanting to go to a place where they kept saying, there are no women in Vietnam. And you so wonderfully put out the scenes that are absolutely, they're horrifying, yet they're so human. And the humanity and the love that shines through, and the fact that these three women have each other's backs, and that's really what gets them through. And I know that you interviewed a number of nurses who were in combat. They were in combat. Let's get real here. When you're in one of these, you know, temporary operating rooms, and there are rockets and shells flying all around, and all of a sudden you have to hit the floor while you're still, you know, suturing someone up. That's combat,
right?
And these women were heroes.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I felt so, you know, it was one thing to read all their accounts and to write the book and to create Frankie and, you know, to shine a light on these women and their forgotten service. But meeting the women, I was totally unprepared for the power of that. When I reached out to finally get some help, I thought, okay, I've got to have an actual nurse read this and, you know, and tell me, you know, what I've done right and wrong and where I need help and all of that. I went out in search and I found a woman named Diane Carlson Evans, who wrote a book called Healing Wounds. And it's the story of her service in country and then her coming home and spending more than a decade trying to get the Women's Vietnam Memorial founded, to say basically publicly to the world we were there. And she invited me to go this last November for Veterans Day in Washington, D.C. to the memorial.
Wow.
And to stand, you know, it was a dark, freezing cold night in D.C. and the memorial is all set up and covered in flowers. And to see this, you know, probably 100 female Vietnam War vets standing around, hugging each other, kissing, you know, talking, telling their stories. It was so, so powerful. And they all kept saying, you know, recognition matters. Remembering that we were there matters. And that had been Diane's quest with the memorial. And so I'm still just really proud to get this book out there and have these nurses get talked about and have them be around to read this book and tell their kids and the women coming up behind them their story.
And it took 10 years from the time that the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, the wall was open, that opening day. It wasn't until 1993 that the Women's Vietnam Memorial was opened. The other thing that I do want to talk about is, you know, we've lived through the war and the upheaval about the war. And you go into what it was like when Frankie comes back home when she has her papers, her tour is done. She actually did two tours and her tour is done. And she's in the airport and she cannot believe the reception she gets. And it's the reception that the Vietnam vets got. They were yelled at, they were spat on, there was no thank you. There was no honoring. There was no nothing. And being a woman, I can just imagine, because I know you did your research, the horrifying, you come back from those tours of duty and you come back and you're not only not welcomed, you're not recognized because, as you kept saying, there were no women in Vietnam. You know, back then, PTSD wasn't really known as a thing, as a diagnosis. So you have her going through trying to get help. But again, the first thing was there were no women in Vietnam. It's like there are no women. I don't know how children are here, but no, there are no women. And for you to come and the recognition, the story is absolutely, it's heart-wrenching because it's real, it's true. It's historical fiction, but it's from real facts. In fact, you mentioned that you were going to name the cities and the hospitals, you were going to use phony baloney names, but you were asked not to. You were by the people you interviewed. So all of the cities, all of the names are real places.
Yeah, and even as I was doing the research and even having lived through the memory, you know, I remembered them being treated badly, as I'm sure you do. And even with knowing all that, when I was reading these accounts, it was shocking to me. I mean, I just couldn't believe that Americans, that, you know, that ordinary Americans would not pick up a service person, you know, in uniform as a cab driver, that they got spit upon, that they wouldn't, you know, help with anything. And yet I just kept reading that over and over and over, that they experienced it. And I heard about it again at the memorial in, you know, on Veterans Day in DC. And so it was really important for me to show that, because sometimes, you know, especially as a historical fiction novelist, you tend to think, you keep putting these stories out there that warn people about, you know, things that have been done badly or have not worked for us in the past or the way that we should have been in the past. And you keep seeing that we should learn from history and we don't. And yet with this one issue, I think it is true that part of the reason that America didn't want to hear about Vietnam for so long was a kind of collective guilt, that at some point we began to understand that as Americans, we had failed to honor the sacrifice of other Americans. And so I do think there has been this change where now we separate the war from the warrior. And I think we also trust our government less. So we are less inclined to just believe what they're telling us about a conflict like this.
And one of the things you mentioned, that you had a personal connection to this, was the POW bracelet. And it really wasn't until the early 70s where people started learning about POWs and MIAs. And I remember wearing the dog tags and the bracelets. And it wasn't until that was a known thing that there were, and it wasn't just men, because there were some women who were also POWs or MIAs, missing in action, that people started recognizing the warriors, the combat vets who came home, not the ones that people were waiting for, who they got a letter saying, no, they're not dead. They're a prisoner of war.
Right. And we remember, you know, the yellow ribbons on the tree and Tony Orlando and Don, you know, tie a yellow ribbon. And so there was a change, you know, after the end of the war as well, I think. And but once the prisoners came home, it seemed pretty apparent that the country wanted to move on, that we wanted to put Vietnam in the rearview mirror and move into the, you know, the new landscape.
And as you said, it's only recently, really, where we are starting to recognize, you know, what it took for people to go out there, and the women who were involved, and the women, because they were all not treated well, but the women were totally not recognized because there were no women in Vietnam. Tell that to the 10,000 American female who, you know, military.
And I think these women, you know, upon coming home, I think all of them were told basically, just forget about it. Yep. It's over now, go on. As if this kind of trauma is the thing that every single person can just shed like an old coat and, you know, and forget. And, you know, so without help being out there, without an understanding of PTSD, there was very little help for the male vets either. And there was absolutely none for the female. And I think that's something I think and write about often, is that this idea that if we are, as Americans, going to ask other Americans to make this kind of sacrifice in their lives and with their families on our behalf, we have to very clearly take care of them at whatever level they need when they come home.
Exactly. And it was horrible what we did. How America treated vets, male and female. And as you said, and we'll repeat it again, there were no females, women in Vietnam. So on top of, we could see what happened, you know, the toll it took on the men, the women were invisible.
Right.
And you've brought it to light. Not only have you brought it to light, but ding, ding, Warner Brothers has pre-bought the book so that they can make it into a film, a movie. You have done so much for the voices of women who were silenced. It's not that they weren't heard. They were told to be silent. They were told to push it under the rug. They were told that, you know, what's the big deal? Kristen, if you had one thing to tell women out there, what would you like to say?
I mean, what I keep writing about and what I've learned in these years of mine on the planet are really about the strength and the power of our voices when we decide to use them. And I think we are all, as little girls, you know, don't speak until spoken to, be a good girl, get along, don't buck the tide, you know. And not that there's anything wrong with any of that, but we also need to be taught that ambition matters and that self-confidence matters. And we need to find our strength, however we do that, in whatever our course of travels are. And once we find that strength and find our authentic voices, I think we find a way to speak out and to speak up and to help other women and just other humans, and just, you know, make sure that the women's perspective is not any more forgotten or brushed aside or deemed unimportant.
Kristen, I want to thank you so much for giving a voice to so many of these women who have not been able to use their own voice, don't even realize that they have a voice because they've been told for so long, didn't happen, stop it, you're invisible. Where can people find out more information about you and stay connected?
So I have a website, kristenhanna.com. I am on Instagram and I'm on Facebook. I hope people love this book and Frankie as much as I do, because I just think all of the importance of it aside, it's just a really compelling book that's hard to put down. And I loved this story.
Well, I can vouch for the fact that it's hard to put down because I read it in less than 2 days. I couldn't put it down. Kristen, I want to thank you so much again for giving voice to so many women who just never realized that they could speak out. So thank you for doing this.
Thank you. This was really fun. I enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. If you liked what you heard, please share it with another person you think would be interested. And if you haven't already, please subscribe.
This has been a Life of Prey production.